Thank you for joining us this morning for the Word for Life Radio Ministry. Our guest for the last couple of times has been Gerald Fry, and Gerald is sharing some fascinating information that just helps us to understand what an awesome, awesome God we have. And I was telling him right before our broadcast how amazing heaven is going to be when the Lord just has special times of education for us. And he just says, hey, sit down. Let's talk about this. And he just opens up his creation and shows himself and the wonder of God just in what he did right here for us on the earth. Gerald, welcome back. And thank you so much for sharing these things with us.
Well, thank you, Greg. You know, if one puts themselves to studying God's creation, it's easy to sound smart. God is just awesome in his doing towards the sons of men, as the psalmist says. Today, what I thought I would share with you, and all of this information is being shared in the idea that there's a whole lot of information in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And where did the information come from? As we talked about, information cannot arise from matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't arise from energy. It's massless. And it's essentially an expression of intelligence, or an expression of the will of the sender.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk in particular today about tube worms. So these are the actually quite spectacular worms that were discovered relatively recently along the thermal vents, which are located in most of the fault lines in the oceans.
Right.
And so these tube worms are typically found at depths around 5,000 feet, 1,500 meters plus.
Yeah.
And there's just crushing pressure down there.
Oh, sure.
So the atmosphere is, 14.7 pounds per square inch.
Mm-hmm.
Every 33 feet or so that you go down in the ocean, another 14.7 pounds of pressure.
Wow.
So you can imagine by the time you get down 5,000 feet,
right,
you're down, quite a few atmospheres,
mm-hmm,
150 atmospheres or so. So there's crushing pressure, freezing temperature,
wow,
absolutely just freezing temperature. And salt water, of course, allows the freezing temperature to be lower than 32 degrees.
Okay.
Sometimes as low as 29 degrees or so. And there's no sunlight.
Sure.
So now if you think about all the life we think of, the plant life, the animal life, it's all dependent on sunlight. Okay. It's all photosynthesis-based.
Sure,
it's
sure.
all solar-based.
Right.
Which is perhaps why, in many cases, once the ancients rejected God, they looked to the sun as the source of life.
Right,
and there's some truth to that.
Right, right.
Well, these giant tube worms, they grow up to 8 feet long, so over 2 meters long. So they're really huge.
My goodness.
Interestingly enough, they grow to this size with no mouth and no digestive system.
Wow.
So how does this happen? Well, it turns out that they're in what's called a symbiotic relationship. So there's another life form, in this case it's a bacteria, that they have to coexist with. Now, this coexistence is symbiosis. It's not a parasitic relationship.
Okay.
In a parasite,
okay,
one sucks off
right,
of the other,
right,
lives off of the other.
Yeah.
In this case, they both need each other in very, very powerful ways. And the interesting part is, exactly how do you evolve this? Once I explain how intricate their relationship is, it's like, well, how do you do one without the other? How do you get there without building the system at the beginning?
Right.
Kind of like a transmission. You know, which parts are you going to not have?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to build it with just some of the parts?
Right.
You've
got
to have them all, and they have to be
at the same
interoperable
time,
and at the same time, right? They have to work together.
Mm-hmm.
These bacteria, it turns out, make up one half of the body weight of this worm. So
wow,
we're talking about a few bacteria.
Oh,
we're talking
yeah
about a lot of bacteria.
Is it inside the worm or on the
it
outside?
Is. It's on the inside.
Okay.
At least when the worm's an adult. The bacteria convert chemicals from the hydrothermic vents into organic molecules. So these hydrothermic vents are throwing out tons of sulfur and toxic compounds. But these bacteria have a special ability to extract from that organic molecules, which then can be consumed at the molecular level by this tube worm.
Right.
So when you look at these pictures of the tube worms, and I encourage you, go to Google or something and look, and they're spectacular. Well, they have these red plumes, real bright red. Huh. Well, they're bright red for the same reason your blood is bright red. It's hemoglobin.
Hmm.
Not quite like our hemoglobin, but it's hemoglobin. And so this hemoglobin exchanges compounds such as oxygen, carbon dioxide, and hydrogen sulfide with seawater. Now, normally, when there's hydrogen sulfide, it has a chemical reaction or a property that's similar, for instance, maybe to carbon monoxide in that it will bind with the hemoglobin and you can't breathe. And that's why we die.
In the
presence of too much carbon monoxide, a human will simply cease to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
That's because the hemoglobin binds. Sulfides have the same kind of effect.
Okay.
Nevertheless, this creature actually extracts the hydrogen sulfide from the water. Now, this plume then takes these materials, and it turns out the bacteria need those materials. So the tube worm is extracting this with its hemoglobin, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. It's a very special kind of hemoglobin. And it feeds that to the worms, which are in their, I'm going to call it stomach so people understand it, but it's really called a tropozone.
Okay.
And then the bacteria are actually extracting from these hydrothermic vents, from these toxic chemicals, turning some of it into organic molecules that the worm can live on. So they literally are entirely dependent on the other species to feed them. Neither one can exist on their own.
Which helps us understand they don't need a mouth.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the outer part of the worm is made of a substance called chitin. It's like the same as the exoskeleton of crabs, lobsters, shrimp, et cetera.
Okay.
And one of my favorite is there's a very large colony of these below the surface of the ocean right by the Galapagos Islands. Mm-hmm. So this is God putting his stamp right there where Charles Darwin wrote his Origin of Species and saying, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, he has a sense of humor.
So it's almost like God saying, nah, nanny, boo, boo.
Yeah. So let's talk about this symbiotic relationship. This digestive tract, when the larvae are laid by the tube worm, transiently connects from something we'll call a mouth. It's an opening.
Okay.
At the tip of the ventral medial, it's the top of the tube process, and it follows with a foregut, a midgut, a hindgut, and an anus. So it has the larva has a digestive system.
Okay.
These bacteria are called symbionts in this case. They're established in the midgut by absorbing through the skin. So they have to be in the water.
Okay.
And here's one of the most unbelievable statements in the scientific literature. It undergoes, quote unquote, substantial remodeling and enlargement to become the tropozone.
Hmm.
In other words, the remainder of the digestive tract is not detected in adults. This thing literally goes inside this tube worm, the larva, as it's developing, and takes out all of those structures, literally takes them out, and creates the midgut into something that's now called a trophosome. It's called that because it actually does chemical processes, so much biological processes.
Right, right.
In my experience, I haven't run across anything like it in nature.
Mm.
It's so unique. The bacterial symbionts colonize the developing tube of the settled larva and enter the host through the skin. This process continues through the early juvenile stages during which this trophosome is established from essentially mesodermal tissue, the tissue that's around the midgut.
Mm-hmm.
In the later stages, masses apoptosis, that means death, of host epidermis, that's the tissue, muscles, and undifferentiated mesodermal tissue, the stuff that's not actually used by the symbiote, is destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
When we're developing in the womb, apoptosis happens to us between our fingers. That's why we don't have webs.
No, okay.
And so there is this process.
They're destroyed.
But in this case, it's not the organism. It's a different organism that's coming in and literally, quote unquote, enlarging and remodeling.
Right, right.
The entire innards of this creature.
Wow.
So the other thing that happens is as soon as the apoptosis hits a certain level, the colonization stops. In other words, the skin closes and they no longer take any more of the bacteria in.
Hmm.
All of this is controlled. So these are what I call the ridiculous impossibilities of this situation.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous. The red plumes, they're extremely complex hemoglobin chains, 144 peptides. This is a very large hemoglobin. Human hemoglobin is much smaller than that. Okay. And the point of this is to harvest diffused oxygen from the seawater. Diffused oxygen in the seawater is essentially a surface phenomenon. It comes from photosynthesis from sunlight. So that means that all the surface things have to actually diffuse the oxygen as a result of the photosynthesis process.
Right.
And then this creature down there is entirely dependent on what's happening up on the surface.
Wow.
Then the hemoglobin chains are remarkable as they carry oxygen in the presence of sulfide, normally not possible. We still don't know why that is. We don't know why that's possible.
Yeah.
The tubeworms then concentrate toxic nitrates and nitrites, in particular the nitrites, in the bloodstream to 100 times the concentration in the environment. So they essentially turn their bloodstream into something that to us would be incredibly toxic, right? They talk about the fact nitrites are, you know, a source of cancer. When anything generates nitrites, like when we grill our food and stuff, I'm still going to eat grilled food, by the way.
Okay.
But
okay.
Those nitrites are supposed to be bad for us.
Gotcha.
The nitrite is converted to ammonium ions to produce amino acids by the bacteria. Those amino acids are used to harvest these organic molecules from the toxic vents. Mm-hmm. So I have all this toxic stuff coming out of the vent.
Right.
I create a level of toxicity in the host bloodstream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That toxicity comes from a process we can't understand because it's extracting oxygen as a result of the use of sulfides. It takes all of these impossibilities and ultimately creates food for the host.
Wow.
So he takes all these impossibilities and literally it becomes the food generation.
Yeah, yeah.
So how the tube worm can accomplish and survive the concentration of nitrites, which is normally fatal, is unknown.
Mm.
And so this has become an area of intense study.
Oh, I bet.
And the reason it's intense study is not to give glory to God for creating such a marvel, for, you know, giving us just another demonstration, but rather these are called extremophiles. And so they expand the definition of life so that they can then look into the outer spaces and have more planets that can have harsher environments that would support life. And so at the end of the day, it's like most of the blessings that God gives us, man looks at those blessings and then turns them around and uses them to deny God's creation.
Jerry, thank you so much. We will continue this the next time we're together. Just wanted to remind you to set aside the date of September 27th. It's a Tuesday, and the Creation Science Society of Milwaukee will be meeting here at Brookside Baptist Church in our main auditorium, 7 p.m. that evening. And Jerry Fry will be the speaker. And bring your young people, and it will help them to understand the awesomeness of our God. Until the next time, may the Lord bless you in a fantastic way.